Meandering in the margins of medicine, it's the Shortcoat Podcast.
Weird news,
fresh views,
helpful clues and interviews.
By students, for students.
Subscribe to our weekly show at theshortcoat.com.
Hey there, Shortcoats. I'm here in the studio today with UI medical student, occasional co-host. Been a long time, though.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for having me back.
You're welcome. I look with disapproval on how long it's been, but hey, you're a busy man, Terrence Wong.
And I'm sorry I haven't been around as often as you would have liked.
Well you should be. But look, I'm going to give you a break, because not only are you a medical student, but you're also, I guess we could call you, you're in the startup scene now.
Yeah.
Aren't you? You're one of the founders, right?
Yep.
Not the, but one of the founders of MedMentor.
Yep.
A company that wants to, and tell me if I get this right, wants to connect pre-medical students with med students from across the country as a way for pre-meds to maybe maximize their chances of success in applying to medical school.
Yeah, and the whole idea is this. The whole idea is to really empower medical students with a platform to open what we call mentor clinics. And what are these mentor clinics? These are things where, you know, you can go in there, and it's sort of like if you're a doctor and you do open up a clinic, you can schedule times with your patients, right? And
yeah.
similar idea to that. And we have three specific mentor clinics now. We have the general application clinic, the personal statement clinic, and an interview clinic. And, you know, the idea is to really offer practice and really in-depth information about the med school process, about getting mock interviews, about how to draft your personal statement, because it isn't as simple as it seems. There are, you know, specific things that admission committees are looking for, and having the expertise of people that have done it and succeeded in that process, especially at a school that you're interested in going, mm-hmm. is super beneficial.
Okay. Well, let's back up for a minute. What is the connection for you between medicine and business? I know that you sort of are into business. This is something that you, I don't know, it's been a hobby for you, I guess.
It didn't start off as a hobby. It started off as a requirement for me.
Okay.
So I grew up in California in this place called Oakland. You know, I moved around a lot as a kid. And in the beginning, it wasn't so much something that I did as an interest, but more so out of necessity. So, you know, my parents didn't necessarily have the resources to provide, you know, things that a kid wants, mm-hmm. Or needs. And it, you know, absolutely wasn't their fault. You know, it's just, that was the state of our circumstances. Yeah. And so, you know, my brother and I, we often, you know, did business type things.
Sure.
And you know, what's interesting is that at the time when you're a kid, you don't think of these things as business type things. They're just things that you do with your brother. Right. And in retrospect, looking back, actually it was, you know, it really shaped my personality to have that insight into, the importance of business. Yeah. But you know, when we were kids, we had like, you know, a couple eBay stores where we were power sellers. We sold everything and anything to the world. Anytime anyone needed anything or needed anything sold, you know, we sold that. And it was awesome because, you know, I've learned from a young age.
How old were you when you were doing that?
Oh my gosh. I was like 10, 11.
So I'm envisioning like little T-Wong.
Yes.
As a power seller on eBay.
Yeah. And you know what's funny is you're on eBay, right? Or you're on Amazon. You're buying someone from something. You think that it's like some big factory or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's sort of, I mean, it wasn't, but it sort of was to me.
Right.
As a kid, it was a big factory for me. Like, it was awesome. It was having your own entire physical store, but, you know, in the digital world through the internet. And it was awesome.
So, I mean, you could have gone into business and maybe get your MBA, but you decided not to do that. What moved you to become a medical student?
So, you know, we people have different interests, right? And you sort of can't control what you end up falling in love with, right?
Yeah.
A lot of times.
Yeah.
And the truth is I fell in love with medicine, and, you know, business has always been there.
Mm.
And so, you know, at my interview here at Iowa, actually, you know, it's a 30-minute interview.
Yeah.
You have two people interviewing you. Sometimes it's a clinician, and, you know, the other person is typically like a researcher type, like a PhD type.
Yeah, yeah.
We spent 28 minutes out of 30 talking about, you know, the idea that I wanted to bring to market when I got into med school, which was at the time called Pre-Med Sidekick. It was a Android application that we developed. Mm-hmm. It wasn't ready for prime time then, and it failed. But, you know, it's one of those things with business, right? It's a lot of times they fail.
You fail.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, but it wasn't a complete failure. Like, my friend who was on that project that I work with now, you know, went to Google. My other partner at the time is at Amazon, and yeah. I'm here.
And I guess you use those failures to inform your future projects.
Absolutely. And it's sort of, when you do startup things, you really need to have the type of personality where you're great with criticism, because you're going to get it from everyone, especially people that, you know, are close to you, family members.
Oh,
and
okay.
I learned from a young age that, you know, it's not their fault that they don't believe in the idea. It's just, it's a crazy idea.
Right.
What does it mean to stand there and say, you know what? I don't like the way the world works, and I'm going to change it, and this is how I'm going to change it. It's crazy. That is a crazy idea to say and to believe. And so it makes sense that you are by yourself when you say that. There's no one around you.
Yeah, my guess is you always get more criticism of the idea than you get, you know, like pats on the back and, hey, this is a good idea. This is a thing you should do. And
well, here's the thing.
Like, how did you get resistant to those criticisms? Are you just like, I don't give a...
In my entire life, you know, Dave, you know me, like, we've talked so much about, you know, my childhood and things like that. My entire life has been, you know, people saying, hey, there's no way you can do it. Like, you're from Oakland, dude. Like, there is no way.
Mm.
Why would, like, you're not even going to live past 21, let alone go to college, let alone go to medical school, let alone go to a top 30 medical school.
Mm.
I mean, these are crazy things that, you know, at a young age, you're young, you don't know, and you listen to them. But I've learned through time to just really have this like exoskeleton, and I've come to the point in my life where I love negative criticism. And this sounds crazy, I'm gonna tell you something crazy, okay? I don't like positive feedback, and the reason I don't like positive feedback is it doesn't help us get better. It makes me feel good, it makes me feel warm and fuzzy inside, you know, but it doesn't help our product get better. It doesn't make me a better doctor. It doesn't help me improve my suturing skills. It doesn't help me, you know, do better histories with my patients.
Yeah.
I need people to tell me why I'm doing poorly so that I can work on those areas. And business is no different than that.
Okay. Fair enough. I always wonder how a founder gets in touch with people who can bring their vision to life, you know, whether that's co-founders or coders or mentors. Or whatever. Who did you find to play these roles, and how did you find them?
From a young age, so, you know, I was like one of the few Asian people in Oakland, right? So Oakland, Richmond, California, these are places that are predominantly Black. And so from a young age, I learned how to make friends very well.
Mm.
And it's something that has really stuck with me as I've gotten older. You know, I make friends with everyone because, number one, it's awesome to have lots of friends, and it's awesome. Like, it's just great. And if you look at it from like a really selfish perspective as well, you know, you get further in life with more friends. It's simple as that. Yeah. And so, you know, throughout my, you know, college experience, throughout my med school experience, I've always been able to meet lots of different people. And so when you have an idea, and you talk to people with the resources to help you, they can do that. And so, you know, like a couple of years ago, after the Pre-Med Sidekick didn't do well, you know, I didn't give up. And I said, hey, you know, we really put our, you know, efforts into this, and it didn't work out. But we're not going to give up. We never will give up. Like, giving up is not an option, absolutely. So my thinking was, how can we get better? How can we redo this? How can we redesign it? And really make it work this next time. And so I talked to, you know, my co-founders now, Amitaj and Kwa. You know, these are guys that are, you know, at top companies in this world. I mean, when you go to school to be an engineer, you dream of working at these companies.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is. These are guys there. And I said, hey guys, you know, like, I have this idea. Here's the idea, and here's what I need. And, you know, they have resources. I don't have that many resources.
Yeah, I mean, even if they're not able to help you out, even if your resources aren't able to help you out, they have people that they know who might be able to get into it with you.
Right. And what's awesome about them is that, you know, their contribution to this isn't just like financially. Like, we work on this. We talk about this every single day.
Yeah.
Like, I am talking to them on, you know, chat every single day, like every hour. And we're working on this together.
Right.
You know, like, they have expertise. You know, Kwa, he's our Google guy. He manages our tech team. And, you know, they do things that I have no idea. I have no idea what they're doing. You know, from our perspective, Amitaj and I, we're like, hey, this is what I think the user could benefit from. They could benefit from blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And I think that it would be great if we did it here on this page in this method. And then Kwa then says, here's, you know, blah, blah, blah from the technical perspective. Can it be done? And sometimes he might say something like, you know, I think it would be better if we did it like this. And then they discuss it. He discusses it with their team. They can then draft up a timeline as well as a budget of how much it's going to cost.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, I've always been very lucky to be surrounded with people that are much smarter and better than myself. And, you know, absolutely, I mean that. Like, these guys are amazing.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way I could do this by myself.
Mm-hmm. As you mentioned before, you know, you and I have talked a lot about your sort of business aspirations prior to this. And as I recall, you kind of thought that other people in med school and doctors, you know, they might not understand.
Yeah. So
is that still true?
Absolutely, it's true. You know, the culture of medicine.
What is it that they don't understand?
Okay, so the culture of medicine is this: you don't talk about money. Money is not something doctors talk about,
uh-huh.
And I think that that has been an institutional culture that is changing now, however, has not changed. All first and second year of med school in our didactic classes, right, we discussed the cost of healthcare in every single class. We always talked about it. Why? Because it's important.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't mean that it's accepted yet. It's just not something that doctors talk about. But, you know, some of my best mentors have always told me, if you believe in an idea, you should stand firmly, even though the entire world is telling you that it's, you know, not going to work, or it's bad, or it's a bad idea, or, you know, whatever they might think about it. If you believe that it's something that can help people,
mm-hmm.
stand firm on your position, listen to feedback, adapt your product and your services, and grow better, make something better that will help the world.
Yeah.
And sort of that is a fight that I fight all the time, because, you know, there was an issue here where, you know, a few of my colleagues had really, I think, very reasonable feedback for us. And they didn't feel that, you know, this is something that we should charge money for. And I totally understand from their perspective. And
why do they feel that way?
They feel that, you know, mentoring is not necessarily something you should charge money for. And giving advice is not something you should necessarily charge money for. So the issue is this. So for every 2 to 3 people that are publicly against your idea,
mm-hmm.
there's like a bunch of other people that agree with idea but won't publicly say it because they don't want to be that person talking about money with mm-hmm. medicine and mentoring. It's just, that's just how it is. How do I know this? Well, I've gotten tons of text messages, Facebook messages, emails from my colleagues who have in secret, and I'm not going to like mention who these people are, but I'm going to tell you there's a lot of these people.
Well, that's really funny.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. Who have said, you know, I think this is a great idea. And, you know, they understand the perspective. It's this: look, we're busy in med school. We can offer really great help to people. But at the same time, I want to earn some lunch money doing it. But, you know, people won't say this, right, in public. So really, I'm standing by myself in an arena, right? I'm the gladiator in the arena.
Okay.
And there's like 4, 5, 6 vicious lions attacking me, and I'm by myself.
Yeah.
And there are people that agree with me, but, you know, they're not going to publicly agree with me, which I completely understand.
Yeah. It's a risky proposition to sort of stand out like that. Yeah.
Yes. In many ways, my reputation in my class is I'm sort of that business dude, which is, you know, that's fine. Like, it's not the worst thing you could say about me.
So what are the challenges in launching a business venture in medical school? I mean, there's time.
That's time,
obviously, the big one.
I wish, you know, I always wish for more time. There's never enough time in a day. The challenge is balancing your life, because med school is already a full-time job and more on its own,
mm-hmm.
and doing a startup is a full-time job and more on its own.
Yeah. Do you engage in polyphasic sleep?
I don't sleep anymore. I stop sleeping. Like,
do you know what that is? Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Kobe Bryant does that.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't sleep anymore.
Okay.
I just stop sleeping. So yeah, why is that?
Sleep when you're dead.
That's my, yeah. You know, I know that this is going to take a toll on my health, and that's fine. Like, I don't plan on living forever. I have ideas that I want to bring to the world, and I think that these are great things that help people, mm-hmm. and that is enough reason for me. But, you know, logistically, how does that happen? It happens, you know, lunchtime, I come here to do something like this, right?
Yeah.
I do a podcast, and, you know, I get to help Dave with his podcast and hopefully talk about something interesting for his audience. And then at the same time, we get some exposure in the world, right?
Yeah, well, we appreciate that.
Yeah, and I think that's just, you know, that's just mutual benefit, I think.
So the problem, I think I understand the problem you're trying to solve for pre-meds.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, they crave information for how to do well in their application process.
Yeah.
Basically. But I'm wondering, like, if one goal is to, so you, I read before you one of the bits of material you sent me, said that, you know, one of the goals is to increase diversity in medicine.
Yes.
And so I started thinking about that, and I'm wondering if starting with pre-meds is like too late, because they're already on the path.
Mm-hmm.
Could you see a day when you could expand to people before they become pre-meds? I mean, how would you go about that? Because that seems to me where you would want to go to really get involved. Do high schoolers need mentoring in how to get into pre-meds? How to get into pre-med?
I want to emphasize, okay, so I want to emphasize that our number one mission, not one of the missions, our number one mission is increasing diversity in medicine. That is the number one mission. But to answer your question is, when should we intervene in the world, right?
Right.
Ideally, in my perfect world, we would intervene while they're still, like, in utero. You know, like, 5 months gestation, right? But, you know, realistically, that's not possible, right? And you're right. Realistically,
ethically, that would be strange.
Yeah. You know, you're right. It's something that at some point you just have to say these two populations is where we're going to intervene. But here's the future idea, right? So the future idea is we develop a platform that works.
Mm-hmm.
And then once we have a platform that works, it's very easy to then copy and paste to other populations,
mm-hmm.
not just medicine, but law school, business school, engineering, pharmacy, whatever, right? Dental school, high school.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we have lots of different spinoffs from this idea.
Yeah.
And really the mission of it all is we think that we can help the world in terms of having different types of people in medicine, mm-hmm. in education. You know, why is that important, right? It's something we don't really discuss in public, right? We say that diversity is good, and generally this is what people say, but why is that? You know, in the perfect world, gender, skin color, religious beliefs shouldn't matter, right? We should treat everyone equally all the time. But, you know, that's just not how human beings are. Human beings identify with people that sort of look or think or believe similar things, right? And so if you're a person that had like an older sibling or an uncle or a cousin that went to med school, it's easy for you to sort of identify with that person and then follow in their footsteps. To you, it's like, you know, that was never anything odd or abnormal. So to you, that's the norm.
Right.
I can tell you from my perspective, as well as a lot of different students' perspectives, that if you don't have that, when you don't come from an academic family, when you don't have those role models in your life, it is incredibly challenging.
Mm.
And, you know, for me, I was super lucky, okay? I had this friend from Stanford Med who, you know, he looked similar to me. He had a similar background. And, you know, he was the type of guy that was willing to mentor me. And, you know, I never thought it would be possible for a person like me to have this conversation with you right now, Dave. Like, this was not something I ever envisioned. I said that before, you know, and I hope I never forget that, because I don't ever want to forget where I came from. But from those places, there is no identification with people who look or think like you, who are in prominent roles in our society. Okay, I said the word no, implying none, and that's not exactly correct. There are few people, right. Few role models to choose from.
Yes, there are a few people like me in the world who are so awesome and well-placed in society. What are your plans for the mentors? Like, what do they get out of it? They get money. I mean, they get a little spending money.
You know, so when you first sort of draft up an idea of how a service would work, right? Like, why should a person sell something, and then why should a person buy it, right? So you sort of have to really tease out those things. So in my opinion, I think here are what med students want, and it's in this exact order. What they want is something that can really help them for the residency application, right? I want to have something on my residency application where I did this mentoring thing. It was awesome. I got to connect with students all around the world, and it was really just like this great experience. I've learned a ton from it. You know, if I want to go into academic medicine, you know, teaching students is a big part of that, and I want to be a great doctor, but I also want to be a great teacher and also a great mentor. This is a perfect opportunity to do that. Second thing, people go into medicine because they want to help people. You know, they say that, you know, there are easier ways to make money than being a doctor, and you're right. Like, our training is long. You know, I don't want to use the word sacrifice because that's not how I see it. You know, I think this is a fantastic opportunity, and I have never sacrificed anything to study here. I've worked hard, and there are times where, you know, I wanted to maybe hang out with my friends, hang out, grab a beer, watch the game or something, right? But I couldn't because I had to study. But people here are here to help people. And I think that this is a great way to do that. It's a way that's convenient for med students. Med students are busy. It is true. They're absolutely busy. But here's the thing. You can do it from your computer. You know, we're connecting two populations of people through video chat and very high quality video chat. We're talking about high resolution video chat that streams without any lag. Like, it's a great way to do it. And the third thing is lunch money. You know, it's nice to earn a little bit of lunch money.
Yeah.
It is nice.
Yeah. I guess another question I have about the role of the mentors is, do they have any special expertise at getting into med school? I mean, yeah, they got in. But does that mean they're experienced enough to guide someone through that process? I mean, my feeling in talking to students is that, you know, they maybe have some idea of why they got into medical school, what it was about them that made them attractive to a med school.
Right. So, if your question is every single medical student in the U.S. qualified to be an expert in getting into med school? The answer is no.
Yeah.
But that's not what we're looking for. We're looking for the people that are qualified.
So you're going to screen people and try to figure out.
Well, there's different ways to intervene here. So there's screening, right? Mm-hmm. So in the future, how we hope to screen medical students, we want to have a diverse healthcare team. So what does that mean? So teams that future teams in healthcare will work with, right? So, you know, the PA, nurse, doctor, pharmacist, social worker, you know, the whole team. And we have this committee to screen people in, right? Because we think that when you have this diverse community of people, they can really bring in good people, right? And there are really great people. You know, I know people, okay, that, you know, before med school were writers for Marvel, okay? They were, you know, full-time writers for other big companies, or, you know, engineers from big companies, from Intel or Google. We have people like that in our class.
Like here at Iowa.
Here at Iowa. Sure. And every other med school. You go to any med school. You know, we have this this gentleman named Troy at another med school. He was a Navy SEAL. Like, a Navy SEAL. Like, that's a big deal. And that, like, type of experience is the type of experience when, you know, you're also good at writing that can really make you different and unique, right?
And then you can therefore pass that sort of uniqueness in a way.
Yes.
On.
I'm going to say this very bluntly. When you're a poor kid from Oakland, you don't get those resources.
Yeah.
You don't get that. I mean, it's just how it is, right? You know, I don't want that to be the case. And that's sort of the idea of all of this, right? I don't want that to be the case. And I want that to change. And it's sometimes difficult for people that aren't from that, you know, background to understand. And if you asked me if when I was in college, if you could connect me with some person like that, where I can just get advice, and, you know, I would just pay $25 to to get an hour with this person, I would have said yes immediately.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I have friends who did really well in school that applied to med school like three, four times. And, you know, they didn't know why they couldn't get in. Like, they had great grades, crazy awesome MCAT scores. We're talking about 97th percentile. We're talking about, this is on paper, this person is super qualified, right? But why is it that they couldn't get into med school? And having talked to these, you know, this is not one person. This is like multiple people that I know. And I've had a chance to talk to them, right? And I've asked them, you know, what was it about the process that, you know, you just couldn't do? I mean, obviously on paper, you're amazing, right? And in the feedback, the honest criticism that they had of themselves, they didn't interview well. And they didn't have, you know, Iowa has a great pre-med club called Medicus. It is amazing. I'm going to tell you right now, it is amazing. Not all schools have that. And you'd be surprised. Really prominent schools, like big name, brand name schools, don't necessarily have the best resources to get their pre-meds into med school.
You know, I hear this a lot, and not just for, you know, getting into med school, but even like residency programs. Like, like the prestigious residency programs, they may or may not support people the way you think they could support people. You know, like they may not be the best fit just because they're big names.
Right.
And that's, I think that's sort of what you're talking about, is like the resources, the fit for people, you know?
Right. Right.
So,
and you know, like in California, I'm very familiar with the California UC CSU system, 'cause that's where I'm from. But you'd be surprised at how little support a lot of these big name schools give their students. Because the truth is, there's more than enough qualified students every single year to fill every single seat in California.
Yeah, year. And that's really the, I mean, you're playing a numbers game.
Yeah, and we're talking about big name schools. Yeah. Like, one that comes to mind is UCLA.
Yeah.
You know, at Harvard, for example, like, if you don't join the pre-med track your freshman, sophomore year, you're sort of on your own. And, you know, but if, I mean, if you join it freshman year and you do it the traditional way, you're going to get great support. But if you don't, you're kind of on your own.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, we can't do anything in this world on our own.
Yeah,
that's the truth.
That's a great point, yeah.
That's the absolute truth.
Where are you at in the development cycle?
So we just did our beta testing, and the whole idea, so, you know, really we treat our project now sort of like a scientific experimentation, right? What is that? We have a hypothesis, and our job is to test that. So that's what beta testing is.
Yeah.
Essentially, we're in the lab right now testing our services, and we're trying to get really good data, and we're getting really good feedback from our users. You know, hey, you know, how can we improve? What don't you like about this? How would you change it? What are some obstacles you see that we don't see? And we've gotten a lot of great responses, and we continue to get these responses. And so in the next week, we should be concluding our beta testing and really getting back to the lab to really make these changes, to make those user interface changes. You know, I had a meeting with my partners yesterday, and, you know, something that came up in conversation was the idea of, look, in our world right now, if you do not capture the person's interest in 3 seconds, they're going to leave. Absolutely, they're going to leave. And really, we have to design our user interface and the workflow in a way that really capitalizes on that idea. Our user interface now isn't optimized to that level, but that was the point of this, to find out the answer to that question. And we will do that, absolutely. People aren't interested in waiting. They want information quick, and they want useful information quick, and they want it to be priced like fairly. And so our customers will have very high expectations, and we will definitely deliver on that for sure, no question.
So, where can people go to sort of find out more about MedMentor at this point?
So it's www, that's three W's.
Good job.
.medmentor.io.
All right. Well, fantastic. Terrence Wong, medical student at the University of Iowa Carver College of Medicine, one of the founders of MedMentor. Thanks very much for talking with me about it. Good luck.
Thank you for your time, Dave.
Thanks so much for hanging out with us today, listeners. If you like what you hear, go to iTunes, whether you use iTunes or not, and give us a review. So reviews there help us grow the show, and they go everywhere else on the internet. So it's
It's a good idea. As always, we're listening all over the place. Send us an email at theshortcoats@gmail.com. Hit us up on Facebook or Twitter. Visit theshortcoats.com/tell us. The show is made possible by a generous donation by the Carver College of Medicine Student Government and the Writing and Humanities Program. Our executive producer is Jason Lewis. Our intern is Corey Christensen. Our opening music is by Dr. Vox, and our closing music is by AgriFox. Talk to you in 1 week.